This is the Voice of America broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 14, now 117 hours, 7 minutes into the mission. Apollo 14 Commander Alan Shepard and Lunar Module Pilot Edgar Mitchell are now some 3 hours into their first EVA moonwalk. For a description of the final activities scheduled for this first EVA period, we take you to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, as I hope all of you have heard by now, the moon landing was right on time and worked beautifully. The astronauts have begun to lose a little time since some of the activities began on the surface. It started with the lunch period or breakfast period, depending upon what time of day Al Shepard and Ed Mitchell seemed to be working on personally. And it took them a little longer to eat before they opened the spacecraft up and went out. And it also took them a bit longer than expected to get on the backpacks and get them into operating condition, get all of the switches in the proper modes for communications particularly. Took them a few extra minutes. They dropped behind some 50 minutes before opening the hatch. And we've been keeping a clock on the EVA, or extra vehicular activity, since that depressurizing of the spacecraft, and they have now been exposed to the lunar environment for 2 hours and 50 minutes. And they made up some of that time as they sped up their deployment of the television camera, the high-gain antenna to get better signals back to Earth, as they began opening up their experiments and deploying them. They got down to just 9 minutes behind the timeline for the actual deployment of the ALSEP package, the Apollo Lunar Surface Experiments package. And in the last half hour, it's taken them about 20 minutes longer than expected to find a good site to set up the experiments package. Now, there's no worry about the timeline dragging a bit. They're perfectly comfortable in their spacesuits. They're moving about Framaro. And they're very actively working. We're going to pick up their conversations in just a moment. And they are now setting up the Apollo Lunar Surface Experiments package, the many experiments we're going to be talking about here in just a few minutes. They are now 29 minutes behind schedule in that particular deployment and about an hour and 20 minutes behind their basic timeline since taking off from Earth. With me as our very special guest in explaining the lunar science is a distinguished scientist from the Manned Spacecraft Center team, watching anxiously for data to come in. And when you're not chewing your fingernails, Bill Finney, I hope you will, and waiting for some interesting geological information, I want to thank you for being with us. Dr. William Finney of the University of Minnesota, the geology branch chief for the Planetary and Lunar Science Division here at the Manned Spacecraft Center. Well, Bill, what do you think so far about the beginnings of this EVA? It bodes well, doesn't it?
Yes, they've come up with some rather interesting information so far. It was a bit disappointing that it took a little bit longer for them to start than we had expected, waiting around 50 minutes chewing our fingernails. But they have come up with some rather interesting information. They have seen some rather large blocks out in the distance in the panoramic camera shot that they took on TV earlier, and those blocks they described as being lighter in color than the soil. That is a welcome bit of news. It may indicate that we are getting some different types of rocks than we had in the previous two missions that brought back samples. So we're anxiously waiting to see what those are.
There were some huge boulders. Those were very large, too, weren't
yes,
they?
Yes, these boulders, some of them were expected because on the photos which we used from the orbiter series that were taken years ago, we did realize that there were going to be some large blocks there. The resolution of those photos indicated that we did have blocks on the order of several meters across. So we did expect some large blocks. In fact, on the rim of Cone Crater, which is the largest crater that they will visit, we expect blocks to be as many as 10 to 20 meters across.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are watching the color television camera deployed by the astronauts. It's pointed at their activity, and they're some 200 meters away from the limb. They had to go an extra 100 meters just about to get a smooth enough sight to set up the experiments package. I presume this is because of the geophones, which they want to get on solid ground, isn't it?
Well, there are several reasons. One of the reasons is that some of the instruments do require that they be in a level position for the types of readings that are taken, and they do have to be within a certain elevation in order to do this. They're spread out over quite a large area, all of the instruments.
Well, let's pick up this conversation here.
Extension. I'll have more word for you on that later.
There was a word from Bruce McCandless of Mission Control for a 30-minute extension at least. Al Shepard says we'll continue on here then.
Okay,
did you get that? Something about the right
amount of dirt.
Oh, the station is level. He's leveling one of the devices, just as you pointed out about the idea of having them very, very level. I didn't catch which one it is yet.
No, I didn't hear that.
They have deployed the geophone cable. This is the, at least they've all taken it off the mobile equipment transporter, the rickshaw cart. I don't believe I've seen Ed Mitchell walk way out with it yet.
I didn't see him come out with it.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can pick up another part of the timeline there to be following at 2 hours and 50 minutes into there.
Okay, Houston, the Seapley is deployed. It is the ball
the
is Seapley, within the inner ring.
He's mentioning now.
And it is lined up due east. Roger, Ed.
All right, they're back. They're still about 20 minutes behind
Shepard,
the timeline.
Reporting the charged particle experiment deployed.
The Seapley.
Mitchell.
Isn't it? Little Seapley all sitting there. It won't long. All prim and proper. You look really quite prim and proper yourself. A little tarnished now, but hip flow or silk extremities, huh?
Explain the Seapley. Bill, what it'll measure.
The Seapley, as its acronym stands for, a charged particle lunar environment experiment. This is designed to measure some of the charged particles which are at the surface of the moon. It will indicate also some of the particles which may have originated in the sun and are presently interacting with the lunar surface.
There are several of these particle measuring devices. We'll hit
That's
a couple
right.
of the others in a few minutes. Let's see, I heard Ed Mitchell say something about the mortar device, which is scheduled to fire some charges after the astronauts leave the moon. He said it was pointed due north.
And I'm heading out with the side of the CCIG at this point.
The CCIG. There's another of the particle measuring devices, the cold cathode ion gauge.
The CCIG, we have these edges to the south of it. And this thing is being deployed somewhat in a hollow. Is this going to upset the investigators?
Stand by. We'll get you an answer on that.
He's asking if this can be deployed in a hollow. Do you happen to know? You're one of the investigators. Do you know the answer to that, Bill?
The cold cathode ion gauge is designed to measure the, although it's a very low pressure on the moon, atmospheric pressure, it is designed to measure how low that pressure is. It's very low vacuum, of course, but it probably will not make much difference in the, on this one.
Houston, I'll be deploying in accordance with the nominal plans.
Okay, I got you, Bruce. Thank you.
Roger.
Sorry, I was busy at that moment.
That's Ed Mitchell's voice. And 200 meters away from the television camera, even with its zoom lens deployed on this signal coming back across hundreds of kilometers of distance, the astronauts look like two little white blobs, penguins in the Arctic almost, on dirty beach sand, as some of them described it missions back.
And then there's their transporting device sitting off to the side, which can be seen also.
Every now and then we can see a flash of light as the sun reflects off either a helmet or one of these golden-colored cables as they're unreeling some of them.
I'll keep you honest. Al is operating in the central station at the moment.
Roger, honest Al.
Al Shepard's at the central station, and that's where they've set up the nuclear generator to provide electrical power.
One of the things that the CCIG will do is measure the amount of change in the atmosphere on the moon after the astronauts have left. It will show the changes over the period of hours from
the rocket exhaust dissipates.
From the exhaust and from anything that the astronauts themselves have caused in the venting of their suits.
While they're there. It's
right.
That sensitive?
It's that sensitive, yes.
This is a tiny little device. It failed to work on the Apollo 11 landing, as I recall. Something happened.
It worked for about 8 or 10 hours, I think, after mm-hmm. they left.
Mm-hmm. This is a small box.
I believe there was an electrical malfunction in it. Some arcing took place and eventually, mm-hmm. after a matter of hours, destroyed the capability of the instrument.
And this is in association with what's called the suprathermal ion detector. We're going to hear them mention that momentarily, which is what?
Right, that will measure some of the solar wind particles that reach the surface.
Now deploying the lunar atmosphere detector to see if they can detect any atmosphere, lunar atmosphere, including gases from transit events. We're coming up now on 3 hours since cabin depress.
That was the CCIG, the Lunar Atmosphere Device, which you heard John McLeish mention. Go ahead on what's next there.
The as you were mentioning, the superthermal ion detector, it will measure not only some of the solar wind particles, but it will also measure the effects of the ultraviolet ionization on the lunar surface itself. That is, the ultraviolet radiation from the sun will interact with the surface of the moon, and it will produce some charged particles, some ionized particles, and this will also detect that. That will give us some indications of things that we are not able to measure on the Earth. The ultraviolet on the Earth is in large part screened by the atmosphere, so we do have a chance here to see what type of interaction there is with the lunar surface.
Mm-hmm. Okay, up comes the central station, and that's one for the troops on the ground.
Up comes the central station, says Al Shepard.
Can you actually see it from there?
I couldn't see it move up. I can see something, so to speak, flapping in the breeze. I guess that's the foil.
He's pulling it open. That doesn't mean he's fired
flapping
it up.
Flapping in
yet.
The what?
If you're watching on color television or television anywhere in the world, Al Shepard happens to be the red blob on the right.
I hear having a wrestling match with the side to the CCIG.
Oh.
The side is so light, cable is sufficiently stiff, that every time I touch the CCIG, it turns the side over. It's turned it over twice on me now.
In fact, you
but mentioned... What's the output there?
That's
The side is that suprathermal ion detector.
Say again on that, Ed.
Can I get?
Yeah, I missed your last...
I said I've been wrestling with the side of the CCIG out here, and the cable is still sufficiently stiff, and the side is sufficiently light, and this has sufficiently little mass that it keeps getting tipped over.
Can you do anything by moving it back? A little bit toward the central station to slack off the cable?
No. It's the cable from the CCIG to the side.
Oh, okay.
So these devices...
The side is a suprathermal ion detection experiment.
Again.
They're very light there in the 1/6 Earth gravity environment of the moon.
Okay, Houston, I think I have it leveled. Besides that, it's fully balanced. Turns out it wants to tip over very easily to the rear. The CCIG is aligned and leveled. I mean, the side is lined and leveled. And the corners, I guess I better check those.
Okay, Ed, if you have a problem, side is first priority, CCIG comes second.
The solar particle is much more important than just the residue of atmosphere around the moon to you scientists, eh?
Well, it depends, I guess, on what you're most interested in.
Which man is this experiment?
Those that are interested more in the solar history may be more interested in that.
The dynamics of the side are such that pulling this pin on it, almost tipped it over again. I had to use a lever technique to get it off.
Roger.
Okay. The side is deployed.
Roger, and copy the dust covers off.
Now that's about...
Okay, we'll head back and get on to the upper geophone.
Okay, what's the status of the CCIG, Ed?
It's in good shape. It's deployed about 4 feet to the south, east, and pointing almost due south with a little bit to the west.
Beautiful.
During this time, Ed Mitchell is working with that. Al Shepard's been deploying the antenna and working on the central station.
Shepard has raised the frame of the central station. The reflection you see is from the aluminum foil surrounding it.
This is Houston. I show about 3 to 4 minutes overdue on the magazine on the 60-millimeter camera.
They've had a camera out there taking slow-frame pictures.
All right, that boat over there now. I'll turn it off. Okay, just a minute. I'll change the mag later.
Al Shepard is working with the central station, which is a little goldish reflecting device on the right of our TV screen. There's a white blob moving toward the center. I say blob because 200 meters away from the camera, that's what these astronauts look like. That's Ed Mitchell. And he's going near the cart, the rickshaw, the tree carrier.
I'm going to intermediate cooling just for a few minutes, or for a couple of minutes.
Roger, Ed.
Ed Mitchell's going to turn up the cooling in his spacesuit a bit. He says intermediate. Now, if he had it on low, that means he's warm and wants to cool down. If he had it on high, that means he's cold. We don't know where from which position he's turning it.
I've got it in between low and intermediate now.
Now, Al Shepard has moved away from the central station, and it has
Roger,
sort of
Ed.
A gold reflection as we can see it here on Earth. Now,
and I'm going to take the penetrometer measurement now, Houston.
Roger.
Did I get ready for the doctor?
He's about to take a penetrometer measurement, which he just announced, and that is a device which penetrates down into the soil as far as the astronaut is able to push it, and this will give us some information about the mechanics of the soil, the properties of the soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mostly the granular constituents, the solidity of it. Eh?
Yes, this will give some idea of how well consolidated it is, whether they run into rocks in the soil. It would stop it, of course. Mm-hmm. It's to give some information about
the penetration,
the mechanical
capability.
Properties of the soil, what the sizes would be, how compact it is.
Okay.
Because my first one, one hand.
The penetrometer. Ed Mitchell.
Mitchell sticking a rod in the ground to test bearing strength.
Well, let's see, it's going all, nearly all the way up. Six marks, six blacks showing. Six, one, two, three. One, two, three, a double one. And a black and a white. A white, a black and a white below the upper double one, do you understand?
Roger, we do.
That's with one hand.
These
but
marks are all calibrated. For the soil's people.
Push it all the way in.
Roger.
He will use that penetrometer to anchor the geophone line later. So he has to get the penetrometer measurements in before he can put out the geophone line.
Okay, here we go. One hand. And I have two black rings going below the upper double ring. Understand?
Roger, understand.
On one hand. And two hands all the way again.
Do you have any other calibrations of these?
No, I don't know exactly what those.
For the soil analysis people?
The soil mechanics team has made this instrument, and they know more precisely what each mark would mean in terms of the bearing capacity and strength of the soil.
All the way to the upper double ring, one hand.
Roger, Ed. and get all
again all the way up to head.
Okay, the GFO deployment.
Bruce McCann is trying to move him on to the next thing, trying to help him catch up a little of the timeline. The geophone deployment, this is for the active seismic device, the thumper.
And Houston, I'm back at minimum cooling.
Back at minimum cooling. He was a little warm, and so he turned it up a while just to cool himself a bit. There's a liquid solution that runs through some tubes around inside the spacesuit to help the astronaut.
Kitty Hawk overhead is scheduled for a plane change at 118 hours, 9 minutes, 35 seconds ground elapsed time.
And incidentally, there's another team of flight controllers working with Kitty Hawk. We don't hear them. We're not getting reports here. But Stu Russo is very busy up there during these low orbital passes taking photography. And there's a team of engineers and scientists on Earth working with him while all this is going on. You're really getting your money's worth of science this time, I hope.
Also, Russo reported a visual sighting of the limb on the lunar surface a little bit earlier. So he did sight them on the surface visually from the command module.
With photography of that, that would give you a very accurate hack on their exact location.
Yes, he has a high-resolution camera, the HICON camera, which now that he knows where they are, he will be able to zoom in on them and get some close-up shots of the location.
You're listening to the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. You're listening to Dr. William Finney, a scientist of the geology branch of the Planetary and Lunar Science Division at the Manned Spacecraft Center, one of the scientists here anxiously hoping for all of these experiments to work. And he's helping us explain to you around the world how the astronauts are setting out these scientific experiments. That's Al Shepard. Let's listen.
Roger.
He's talking about the Central Station antenna deployment. This is the processing device and the which takes all of the data being measured by the scientific experiment packages and then transmits it back to Earth in the year or 2 years to come, hopefully. How does that look on the timeline, Bill?
It looks as though he is a little bit behind.
Shepard now aligning
Al Mitchell. Mitchell is getting into the geophones now.
Mm-hmm.
And Shepard should be starting soon to deploy the passive seismic experiment. He should finish with the antenna and the central station and get on to the passive seismic experiment mm-hmm. deployment.
There is no concern. We're reporting to you the fact that they're behind a timeline. I would like to emphasize that there's no reason why they shouldn't be behind. There's plenty of time as long as there's oxygen and cooling in the backpacks.
These are simply timelines which are set up ahead of time by the operations people here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, and it's simply a goal to shoot at. You may be a little ahead of it, you may be a little behind it, but there is really no worry about 10 to 20 minutes or 30 minutes even.
We have the references here of how far along in their activity they're supposed to be in, say, 3 hours and 12 minutes, which is the time they've been outside. I heard Ed Mitchell there just a moment ago mention a reading or a check of the side again. There is a leveling device on it. This must be one of the experiments which has to be very level.
Yes, apparently he's having trouble because the cable is so stiff and the instrument itself is so small that the sort of the tail wagging the dog, I guess.
That's a familiar analogy. We've heard that one before. Astronauts Alan Shepard and Ed Mitchell on the lunar surface. 3 hours and 12 and a half minutes so far.
3 hours, 13 minutes.
I have my first geophone at the ground.
That?
And in this soft ground, they go in vertically without any problem, and they push right on in.
Okay, that's the 10-foot one.
That's firm.
Right.
Okay, it's in the Central Station antenna is aligned. I'm going to turn switch number 1 clockwise and switch number 5 counterclockwise. Are you with me?
I'm with you. Go.
Al Shepard's now.
The first of 3 geophones.
Yeah, will you want me to keep me honest there? Second.
Mitchell's deploying the geophones. Al has the antenna installed on the central transmitting station. Now, we're seeing...
counterclockwise. Okay, it's with the orbits.
Roger out.
He's talking about turning counterclockwise. Is that Shepard?
Yes, he is. He's switching on the central station. The science room should begin to receive some indications for the same.
Al, for your information, they're receiving a good signal back from the SF.
And that brings up another subject I've been waiting to tell everybody about, and that is that you and your associates have set up a complete science reception room right off the Mission Control Center. There is a closed-circuit camera so that we can watch the data displays coming in also. And so hopefully we may be able to report to you some of the science data, which will begin coming into Mission Control as Al Shepard turns on the instrument, the central transmitting instrument.
Yes, much of this data should be arriving in that station fairly soon. I'm not sure that the interpretation of the data can be done for several hours, but it will be coming in.
Okay. Shepard said, it looks like on this end it looks good. On the LR cube, that's the laser ranging retro reflector.
Okay, we've also got the PSC final deployment.
That ranging reflector, by the way, can determine distances to the moon to within 20 centimeters.
I was hoping you were going to say 13, because that's what I learned.
it may be that low. 20 is probably the maximum, but it will allow us then to measure very accurately the various small changes in the orbit of the moon, also very small changes on the Earth as affected by the moon itself.
I've lost track of Mitchell. Where did he go on our screens? He's working on that geophone deployment.
He should be coming towards us.
That should be it on the left of the screen there, that little white penguin-like blob.
3 hours, 16 minutes since cabin depress.
That report from John McLeishan, Mission Control. Shepard deploying that laser reflector. There will now be three of these on the moon. Apollo 11, or was it 12? Well, left one.
11 left one.
11 left one.
And the Russians have one.
With one of their moon landers.
Right.
And now Apollo 14 has left one. With three of these devices, scientists on Earth with laser, very accurate laser devices, can do some good triangulation.
That's correct.
For lunar topographical mapping.
That's right.
Am I speaking into your discipline there? Or correct me
that's
if
right.
I'm wrong.
That's right. It will aid in the topographic mapping, and it will aid even more in some of the mechanics of motion of these bodies in the
relative
space.
To each other.
That's
yeah.
right. The moon and the Earth are not always the same distance apart, and they don't move in exactly a smooth pattern either. There are some small perturbations which take place, and this will allow us to measure these things very accurately. It will also allow, to some extent, the various tidal effects to be determined on these bodies.
The lunar tides, the Earth tides, or whether there might even be a swelling and a sinking of the Earth's crust itself.
If these are more than the sensitivity of the instruments, that is in the order of 15 to 20 centimeters, these things could be detected. And we'll have more stations coming up with the Apollo 15 and later missions, too. We plan to have those laser ranging reflector stations.
And Al Shepard is putting out this third one of these instruments right now put on the surface of the moon. You're listening to the Voice of America's live coverage worldwide of the first excursion on the lunar surface by Al Shepard and Ed Mitchell of Apollo 14. You're listening to Bill Finney of the Geology branch of the Planetary Lunar Science Division at the Manned Spacecraft Center with us here in Houston. This is Rhett Turner, and we'll be reporting more for you shortly.
And now here is a summary of late worldwide news.
A color television set in his office kept President Nixon aware of developments on the moon. Correspondent W.B. Sprague reports.
When a successful moon walk seemed assured, the president telephoned Donald Slayton, Director of Flight Operations in Houston. Through him, he relayed his congratulations and his hopes for a safe return to Earth. "I know how many thousands are taking part in this mission," said the president. "Without them, the men would not be safely walking on the moon." Expressing his pride, Mr. Nixon, as has become customary, invited the astronauts to dinner at the White House and for a weekend at Camp David, the presidential retreat, after they return. W.B. Sprague, Voice of America, the White House.
Europeans joined in cheering the successful landing of Apollo 14 on the moon. A Hungarian space scientist, Dr. Péter Hédervári, expressed it when he said, "Hungarians are very proud that the envoys of mankind are on the moon again." At the West German Bundestag in Bonn, deputies applauded when their parliamentary president interrupted debate to announce the Apollo landing. Belgrade Radio carried a live broadcast from the Houston Space Center, and the Yugoslav Television Network scheduled a live broadcast of the moon walk. Eastern European and Soviet radios also carried news accounts of the landing, and Radio Warsaw and Radio Bucharest broadcast the recorded sound of the spacecraft landing on the moon. Communist positions in the extreme northwest corner of South Vietnam were bombarded Friday by American B-52s. The action took place in Quang Tri province, where Allied forces are massed along the South Vietnam-Laos border, sweeping the area for communist troops. No major ground fighting has been reported in South Vietnam. Britain today recognized the new government in Uganda of Major General Idi Amin. The British High Commissioner in Uganda attended the swearing-in ceremony of General Amin. He said he has been instructed to conduct the British government's business with the new government. Dispatches from New Delhi say 100 policemen were hurt by stones thrown at them when they fired in the air to break up a violent attack on the Pakistan High Commission. Demonstrators for the third day were protesting the destruction of an Indian airplane in Lahore, West Pakistan, by two Kashmiris who hijacked it. India banned Pakistani flights over Indian territory, crippling air traffic between East and West Pakistan, and said the ban will continue until Pakistan surrenders the hijackers and pays India for the plane and its cargo. Jordan's Foreign Minister Abdullah Saleh welcomed Egypt's decision to observe a 30-day extension of the Mideast ceasefire. Mr. Saleh said in Amman that Jordan supports Egypt completely and that the two nations share responsibility in confronting what he called Israeli aggression. Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir said the ceasefire should be continued indefinitely. She urged Arab leaders to meet Israel at the conference table for quiet discussions without threats or ultimatums. Efforts are underway on both sides of the Atlantic to see what can be salvaged from the financial collapse of Rolls-Royce, Britain's famous maker of luxury cars. Aviation Supply Minister Frederick Corfield says Britain is in consultation with the U.S. government as well as with the Lockheed Corporation. Rolls-Royce went bankrupt because of losses suffered in developing a jet engine for Lockheed's TriStar airliner. Another cyclone has developed in the Indian Ocean area. The new storm, called Helga, was reported 135 miles, 216 kilometers, northeast of the island of Mauritius and moving south to southwest at a speed of 3 to 5 miles per hour. The Netherlands Broadcasting Foundation says Radio Moscow has canceled a Soviet-Dutch series of exchange programs following a Dutch request to include a discussion on the status of Jews in the Soviet Union. A foundation spokesman said Moscow Radio gave an overloaded schedule as its reason for the cancellation. He said the Soviet radio also says there is no point to discuss the question of Soviet Jews, that judging from the Dutch reaction to the recent Leningrad hijack trial, Holland's public opinion was ill-informed about conditions in the Soviet Union. And that's the latest summary of news.
You're listening to the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. Now back to Rhett Turner and his NASA guest, Dr. William Finney, at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
Well, we're watching those tiny little white dots on the TV screen.
Looking back over it, I see that the cable has knocked down the second flag.
you want me to go back and look at it, or shall we try one shot and see if everything's working?
We just assume go ahead and try a shot and see how it works yet. Have you got the third one in the ground yet?
Ed Mitchell.
The third one's in the ground. Somehow or another, I'm tangled up on this cable.
Ed Mitchell is deploying the geophones for the active seismic detector. The cable between these geophones set about 150 feet apart, some 50 meters apart, is tangling up. There are some flags along the cable line to help him set them up in a straight line, and the cable is... All right.
...west of the central station. It is level. Sun index is zero.
That's Al Shepard.
The cover is coming off now.
Al Shepard is still reporting his work on the central station.
This is Houston. Whenever you're ready... We need to get a calibration on the geophone, so if you and Al would just stand still for a moment, then we can give you a go to commence thumping.
Okay. I'm standing still now. Okay, so is Al. The cover is off of the laser, and it's completely clean.
We can see the geophone seismometer needles wiggling in the Mission Control Center. A closed-circuit TV picture.
During the cover removal.
Roger, Al.
Number two is really going to town, pegging the end of the needle on each side.
And if you can do it without moving around, we'd like to get an EMU status report.
Okay, this is Al. 3.75. Volume 0%. I have no flags, min cooling, and I'm comfortable. Everything is beautiful.
Everything is beautiful.
At 3.75, 34%, and then cooling, no flags, feel great.
That's a report on the environmental, capacity of the backpacks. They've looked right down on a small chest-mounted unit to give readouts back to Earth on their status outside in that life support system.
Houston, your go for... Thumper activity, we will require that you and Al stop 20 seconds beforehand and let it quiet down. They're very sensitive.
Okay, you're getting it from all three geophones, Houston?
That's affirmative.
Number two is still very strongly gyrating.
There goes the first one. Okay, do I need 20 seconds now, Houston?
That's affirmative.
Okay.
The thumper, he didn't feel anything. He doesn't know if it's...
Roger, we copy. Stand by.
If the cartridge fired or not. He's holding the thumper device in his hand. Since he says he didn't feel it, that would seem to indicate that the cartridge didn't go off.
It appears that
way. Hanging a mosey on back and start taking pictures in the meantime.
I didn't see any signal come through either on the geophone when he said that he was
shot at all. Thumper firings. We'll stand by.
So he may have some difficulties for a while to get that straightened up.
This is a fairly straightforward little device. It's a group of cartridges which are fired off.
This is Houston. We saw an arm and a disarm signal on that. We would like you to attempt to fire squib number one again at the same location. Over.
Okay, I have it moved.
A dial is turned.
Now, if you hold your position, we'll give another go at it. Okay, I'm steady.
Al's going to stop, stand very still, a number of meters away. Everybody has to stand still for about 20 seconds to let the surface below them calm down. These little seismometer devices are just that sensitive.
Five, four, three, two, one, start. Okay, we got it that time, Houston.
hard trigger.
We copy.
He's got to pull the trigger a little harder.
These are all the little things
you
never can tell until you get up there and try it.
This is the thumper. We can't hear it, but the shots are firing in the bottom of this device.
Did you know that...
That's Al.
They were filming that last magazine at 6 frames per second. Did you take that into account?
That's affirmative. 6 frames per second was nominally 16 minutes, and we ran for almost 20.
Okay, the little ball indicator was indicating empty. Okay. I'm ready for another one. Go.
Ed Mitchell's ready to fire off another one. Everybody's got to stand still for 20 seconds.
Mitchell standing close to the third geophone for that first firing.
In the support room, the scientists are all watching the little measuring devices, watching the needles.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Gotta be tried again.
It didn't fire.
Apparently not.
His trigger.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire. A hair trigger, this isn't.
A hair trigger,
okay,
this isn't.
And, we copy it fired on that one, and we see it.
We can see one needle swing when he pulls that trigger, so we know when he's pulling
the
other
fire. Okay, Echo is coming off, and Delta-Delta is going on.
Roger, understand Dover, Delaware is going on the 16-millimeter camera.
Those letters refer to the letters on the magazines for identification on the film magazines when they come back.
Okay, well, I'm ready for another one. And Houston, this is number 2.
It should be number 3, Ed.
Okay, counting from 0, it's number 2.
Roger, counting from 0. Counting from 0, it is number 2.
You fired off one at 0, I believe.
Okay.
How many of these things are there? You recall? I'll look it up.
21, I believe it is. 20 or 21, I think.
They're about the power of a 22 caliber cartridge.
3, 2,
here we go.
1, fire.
I don't think it went.
There it
goes.
One of the seismometer...
Beautiful, Ed.
Beautiful. The seismometer 3 went off, didn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All set photos. Juliet, starting frame is 6.
Roger, frame 6, Jakarta, Java.
That's Alex Shepard reporting on the condition of the movie
that
camera
was
that he's operating.
That was to be so prosaic.
Yes, we can see that signal quite well now from the thumper.
There's a 22 position selector switch up on the top of this pole light device.
Coming up on thumper firing number 4, they're done 15 feet apart.
About 5 meters apart. And
5, 4,
here we go again.
3, 2, 1, fire. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
There's the same.
This thing has a pretty good kick to it.
Okay, good shot, Ed.
Pretty good kick to it, says Ed Mitchell. There's a delay before we see the signal.
That's right, and the delay will become greater and greater as he moves further and further along the line. You see, what we're seeing is the vibration on geophone number 3, and it will reach that particular geophone at greater and greater intervals of time as he moves away along the line as he fires this thumper.
We have these 3 geophones or seismic transducers about 50 meters apart, 3 of them, and he's walking on a line between them. All right, here comes the...
That's affirmative. Counting from 1, you're on number 5. Counting from 0, you'd be on number 4. Over.
This will be the 5th one.
Okay, give me the count from 0. That's what I'm marking on.
Okay, from 0, you're on number 4.
Okay, Al, I'm ready.
All right, Shepard has to stand still.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's off a number of meters away. The Thumper activity, one of the most exciting of the new experiments on this.
That's being facetious, Bruce. That's the way it's marked.
Okay, I'm not fighting you.
This information that we'll get from this Thumper activity and the seismic experiment will tell us about the layering that may exist in the first 2 meters below the surface, so that we may be able to tell whether there are different characteristics to the several layers that may be there. There we go.
Okay, let's try it again.
It didn't fire. Whoops. There's a...
5, 4, 3, 2, 1... Number 4, Bruce.
The trigger on it's a little difficult. We can see when he pulls
Roger
the trigger.
Roger, let's go to the next position, next initiator.
I'll go numbered 4. That was would have been firing number 5.
3, 4, 5.
He's having trouble pulling the trigger.
Okay, Ed, what I meant was the next geophone line station with the next initiator.
Okay.
So, using initiator number 5.
Let me try this. Say again what you want me to do, Bruce.
Okay, using...
both number 4 and number 5.
Using your initiator number 5, you ought to move on to the next station, which will be the 6th position. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And try it again.
Okay, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You're hearing the voice go all the way to the moon and back there as it rebounds through the astronaut's receiver.
And Ed and Al, for your information, you've been out 3 hours and 35 minutes. And you're about 35 minutes behind the nominal timeline with a half-hour extension expected.
So they'll be out at least a half-hour longer.
All right, Jim. Yeah, I'm ready to try again.
Longer than originally planned.
Okay, still go ahead, Jim.
Some 20 minutes in the originally planned schedule. So they'll be out at least another 50 minutes. I believe he's about to the next station. You're listening to the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the mission of Apollo 14 to the moon. And you're hearing live, just as the astronauts are speaking, coming from the surface of the moon. This is Ed Mitchell. Fire.
It just won't fire.
He's having trouble with the trigger.
Try that initiator once more.
Roger, repeat that one at the same location.
Roger, 1, 3, 4, 5.
Hold an arm for 10 seconds.
Okay. Let me reinitiate the arm.
Roger.
1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Fire. It won't go, Bruce.
Okay, next igniter, next geophone station.
Roger.
You're hearing Ed Mitchell is having trouble. He's apparently exerting a good bit of pressure there. You can hear him going as he almost a grunt as he tries to pull this trigger with his pressurized glove. Of course, a man's hand isn't as strong through that pressurized space suit as it would be otherwise.
But they have practiced this type of thing in their simulations with gloves, and it shouldn't be this difficult.
Bruce, mm-hmm. You want a 10-second arm on this one or 5?
10 seconds, please.
He's going to hold the firing trigger for 10 seconds on the next one of the 20-something cartridges.
While Ed Mitchell is doing this, Al Shepard... is taking some photography.
Here we go.
1, 4, 5. Got a good one. 3, 4, 5.
Roger it.
Here's the signal.
Hooray! We got one!
That was
a good
fight. Well, let's see. That's about 30 meters, 30 feet. 10 meters from the last
one. Yeah, I was afraid not to. I told him I was going to break it in half if it didn't fire on that one.
Okay, I'm ready for the next one.
He's moving along. He moves along about 15 steps. Ends up being about 5 meters between each firing of these thumper cartridges. I think the scientists will be happy so far.
Houston, now we would like you to proceed to the central geophone. That is geophone number 2. Select igniter number 11, or make that igniter number 10 by your count, and fire that one off, over.
Instead of the one I'm firing right now?
That's affirmative.
Apparently they're trying to move him on a bit. It's taking a little bit longer
just
because of his misfirings.
Uh-oh. As I was afraid of, Bruce, this one pulled out.
Which one pulled out?
The middle geophone. Is it up in the ground?
Okay, if you can re-emplace it, do so.
We were seeing a spurious reading, what looked like an unusual reading back
the
here.
The ground is so soft that apparently the just the tug on the cable lifted it right out.
Al, this is Houston. What are you photographing now? Over.
Al Shepard working with cameras.
Right now I'm taking the distant shot back to the lab from the RTG.
Roger out.
Coming down to photograph the side.
Roger.
He's taking photographs of the various instruments to show what their exact location is and whether the bubbles are level and the location of these as a whole group of instruments are also taken back towards the limb so that you have a landmark to show exactly how they are all lined up.
In the science room, there's a great cluster of your associates, Bill Finney, there watching. You recognize all of those people?
Well, many of them are back too, but I do recognize one of the persons I've seen looking around two or three times as the principal investigator of this particular experiment.
Number 11 it is.
Dr. Kovacs.
Dr. Kovacs is off. Where is he from?
If you hadn't asked me, I could have told you.
Okay.
Okay, that's firm. Al, I'm ready when you are.
That reading still seems to be a little erratic on that number 2 geophone, the way it's coming in here. It hasn't settled down at all. Just as you predicted, Bill, that took a good while to be seen on the number 1 and 3 geophone readings.
Also, you may notice that the intensity of the signal coming in now as he moves further away is getting smaller. At the beginning of the shots, it was going all the way to the end of the chart.
Taking still photos of the LSAT deployment while Mitchell firing the thumper.
About how deep do you think...
3 hours, 43 minutes since cabin depressed.
A tiny device like that. Several meters?
It'll be on the order of a few meters, maybe several meters. It's not the type of thing that one could expect to give data down to 100 meters. The signal is absorbed.
Oh, here we are.
Much too fast.
Here we are. Data on wave penetration, frequency spectra, and velocity. Hopefully to lunar depths of 500 feet. That'd be 150 or 60 meters or so.
That probably is the...
Is that for the heavier mortar device?
That would be the mortar device, because this will not... This type of 22 firing will not... The small cartridge, like a 22 caliber cartridge, will not give that much of a signal.
Dr. Robert Kovac is from Stanford University.
Yes.
The principal investigator. Ed Mitchell moving on to fire the thumper off again. 12? 11.
Roger.
He's walking back toward the Alsep station, firing off these pumps. Waiting, Ed Mitchell. Al Shepard is taking pictures of the whole experiments package some 200 meters away from the lunar module. We can see most
five,
of it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire. Good shot. Roger.
They all seem to be working now.
Should have directed earlier in the game.
There's about a 5-second delay
right
there.
These seismic experiments are done at three different levels of depth in which they can study the strata, the layering. Mm-hmm. There's this one which covers just the first few meters. Then there will be the mortar shells which are fired off several weeks after the astronauts leave the lunar surface. Those will measure down to a few hundred meters. And then there are the passive seismic experiments that are left on the moon to measure any meteor impact.
Here's one more.
Good shot.
Good shot. Roger. So they're getting some good readings. Yes. A couple of them didn't fire as expected, and he's continuing to walk in through the 100 meter distance with a number of these thump seismic measurements. Thank you very much, Bill Finney, for being with us and helping us describe in very lucid detail the activity of the astronauts, whom we've been listening to live just as they're roaming across the lunar surface conducting these geological experiments. Dr. William Finney of the University of Minnesota, Geology Branch Chief at the Planetary and Lunar Science Division here at the Manned Spacecraft Center. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.
To summarize today's events, the lunar lander Antares with astronauts Shepard and Mitchell settled to the lunar surface at 9 hours 18 minutes GMT. At approximately 14 hours 45 GMT, Commander Shepard stepped from the lunar vehicle to start the many duties program for the first of two lunar traverses. He was followed by Edgar Mitchell some 10 minutes later. Their many duties included the deployment of the equipment storage area, the activation of the color TV camera to provide a picture of the astronauts descending the ladder, then the movement of the color TV camera some distance from the LEM to provide a complete picture of the lunar lander and the surrounding lunar surface. One phase of the EVA included the panning of the color TV camera over various sections of the moonscape for surface documentation. The astronauts then set up the ALSEP research instruments and carried out seismometer experiments, laser reflector experiments, and went on to fire 21 small explosions to create seismic events. This has been the Voice of America's live coverage of the first moonwalk conducted by astronauts Shepard and Mitchell in the Frau Mauro Highlands of the Moon. We'll return to the air with a special worldwide network at 11 hours 30 GMT for the second EVA moonwalk scheduled for the Apollo 14 astronauts. And we'll interrupt our regularly scheduled programs to bring you up-to-the-minute reports on the progress of Apollo 14. Our thanks to VOA correspondent Rhett Turner and his guest, Dr. William Finney. This is Norman Guerin at the Apollo News Center in Washington. This program has come to you from the United States of America.